Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Iron Age Marketing. I am Nikki P, as always. Today's guest is JD. How are we doing here, JD?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. As I said, I woke up this morning to some hail damage in my garden, and that's always a nuisance, we'll just say. Luckily, it doesn't happen too often. So today, we're going to be talking about you, what you create, and try and help some other people, you know, have a little bit more success than they've been having. So let's get started. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. I've been writing, I started writing for real about a decade ago, but I've only been publishing since about 2016. So I took a long time to really get going. And even now I'm still kind of, still a bit smaller, not exactly big or anything like that. But I learned a lot of stuff along the way, some stuff that I didn't really foresee happening, especially to the market or to the scene or anything like that. It's been a strange ride along the way. Yeah, so I started about 2012. I just decided one day, you know what, I like to write, so I'm going to write. So I sat down and I started writing, and I wrote and I wrote and I wrote, and I practiced a lot and I wrote. And then eventually, a couple years later, I sent my first book into El Jaji Lamplighter, great editor, great writer. And she basically said it back to me saying, "This is good, but you have to rewrite the prose because it's awful. It's terrible." So I rewrote the entire book almost immediately and sent her back an example of the prose. And she said, "Wow, that improved really fast," because it takes a long time to really get into this whole, it's like a craft writing. So you have to really dig into it. So it took me a long time to get the hang of it. And when I finally got ready, well, I put out my first book in 2016, not a whole lot of, fanfare at the time or anything like that, but I eventually found my way into a group called the Pulp Revolution, or the Pulp Rev as it was known on Twitter, with a bunch of people who were looking into the way fiction used to be a long time ago, back in the magazine days. And what we ended up doing was we were discovering a whole lot of sorts of stories that were out of print, that were suppressed, for lack of a better term, and so forth. And we started taking inspiration from that and started making a lot of noise. And ever since then, a lot of the stuff I've been making has been more in the vein of that old classic pulp stuff that really, really spoke to me back then. And I think it's really spread a lot, too. I see a lot more people talking about like pulp's influence, pulp style stuff now than I did back then. So like things have really changed.
Well, I know. And I don't have any idea of how old you are. I know for me, I'm moving on 40 years old now. And I think there is a certain, amongst our generation, like a feeling of a whole time period that was kind of lost to us. Like I know of the Tales from the Crypt from the TV show in like the late 80s, early 90s. And I love the show. I have the DVD collection behind me, which amusingly enough, I managed to buy secondhand off of a person in the clergy, which always fascinated me. But there's this, it was a long time after that I ever realized it was based off of an EC Comics publication. And it's like, what is this? Why have I never heard of this? And gets into a whole bunch of, you know, weird stuff within the industry. But, you know, there's this idea of like this whole kind of treasure trove of interesting stuff and a way of doing things that just kind of got stolen from us in a way.
Yeah, I felt that for a while. As when I was growing up, I did obviously, like everybody did, this sort of stuff, like play video games or listen to music or go to the movies. But I also read, and I always thought it was strange that whenever I read anything, it felt kind of divorced from the other stuff. Like, let's say you play a game like Halo. Well, it's not exactly like that in book form. There's a whole, unless you go to a very specific label, which is Bane, you're not going to find a whole lot of stuff like that. And even worse, if you like Sword and Sorcery, there's way less of that growing up. It was really hard to get into this sort of thing. So, like, when I was looking up the pulp stuff, like, through Appendix N and finding all these authors that wrote it and influenced Dungeons & Dragons, it really changed the outlook, my outlook on how it's done.
Well, and even for those of us that grew up on, like, the 90s Dungeons & Dragons, like, I think what our options were, you could read Drist books or Dragonlance books. And Drist was pretty cool. Dragonlance never, ever interested me. So we didn't have a lot of options for, like, this whole kind of immersive world that was out there.
It was just feeling like a strange divorce in what was being put out and what, like, I thought was supposed to be put out. So when I discovered the pulp stuff, it was like a bunch of connections just made sense. And like, oh, okay, then so we can actually do stuff like this. And at the same time, that was happening also, like, Kindle was finally becoming a thing and people could publish. So all of a sudden, there's all kinds of independent artists out there and writers, and I'm finding all the sorts of groups and people, and none of that was even thought of as possible years ago. I never thought it would be anything like that when I started writing. I just thought, well, maybe I'll put something out and maybe somebody will read it. I wouldn't even know where to begin back then.
Well, and like I said, for me, like, I grew up, I'm a horror guy, that's how I got into all this stuff. And I think I read Stephen King's On Writing and discovered, oh, wow, these are all the things that he was inspired by. And ultimately, you know, went back and started reading some of this. Like, wow, this is way better than even King is. Like, it's a whole new way of doing things to me. You know, it's how I discovered Lovecraft and all that. It's funny you talk about the prose thing, because it's like, while King is probably one of the most famous, you know, authors in the horror genre out there, he's never been my favorite, and part of that has to do with the fact that he writes a good story, but I think that there's far better writers out there. And like, when I put him up against someone like Clive Barker, whose just command of the language is so much superior, it's like, it's weird to me that, like, he's the name and, you know, Clive's kind of like just like an obscurity. But then again, you know, he's also a lot darker than I think King ever got, so.
Yeah, it's a weird thing too, because like in, let's say, the 80s, for instance, horror was huge in movies. And even now you go back, I still go back and find movies I didn't know about back then. And it's, wow, this is quite out there. But I also like read a lot of the fiction being put out back then. And I got to the point where it's like, this feels like a third of it is filler and should be cut out. I was like, I reviewed a bunch of it on my blog a while back, and I just like got that impression every time I read it. It's like, this feels like they have to put it in because the publisher told them it has to be a certain length, and it kind of takes you out of it a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And again, nowadays, of course, you don't have to worry about that. You can make a story as long as you want it to be.
Well, I mean, because there's none of the gatekeepers, it's, you know, the whole system changes. Nobody's saying, look, if we don't have 150 pages, you're not going to have it out there. You know, you say, well, I want to make it 80. Maybe I'll tack on 20 pages of a side quest or something like that. You can do whatever you want. So you're kind of moving past where you came from and how you got into this whole thing. What are you working on now? What is the current thing for you?
Well, a bunch of things. I'm usually working on a lot of things at once, but I just put out a Kickstarter campaign that ended for the Gemini Man series, which was originally done by Silver Empire Press, who went out of business a few years back. So they gave me back the books, and I wanted to put them back out, but obviously I had three books and had to figure out how to put them all out for everybody to read. So I put a Kickstarter, and I was for basically an omnibus cover for all three books in one. And I had stretch goals for bonus stories that got reached. So I'm currently writing one of those right now. The first one was sent to the editor, and the second one I'm still outlining. And at the same time, I'm writing another story for a magazine submission period that's coming up very soon.
Oh, right on. I'm curious about how many magazines are there out there that like open submission for this type of work?
Oh, man. Right now, there's Cursova, obviously. There's Story Hack magazine. I was in there a few times, but don't know when they're putting out open submissions again. And Iron Age just recently had one called Anvil. Yeah, I submitted to that one. I have a story coming in issue 2 of that. Aside from those three, there are a bunch of other ones that tend to come and go. I think there's one called Silence and Star Song, which is a science fiction magazine for, I think, Christians. So it's like C.S. Lewis space trilogy sort of thing. Other than that, I'm not aware of any ones that are open on a more consistent basis. Some of them come and go. There was one a couple of years ago that just disappeared and then came back with like a random anthology and disappeared again. And I can't remember their name.
Well, from what I know, a couple of the publications you're talking about, and most of these tend to be like one or two guys that are running the whole thing. So I imagine it's, hey, when the day job's not calling, we've got time to put out the book, we do it kind of thing. But I do feel like the industry certainly is taking a turn in that I think more people are finding it. More people are becoming disgruntled with like what the mainstream offers, certainly. And I think what's struggling right now is the ecosystem building up outside of like what used to exist. It's like you mentioning like 4 or 5 books off the top of your head that put out this kind of material. I mean, that's how many there used to be back in the day. You know, we'll go back to the 90s. How many different how many different publishers were putting out short story material?
They were even harder to find then.
So what type of, do you gravitate more towards like the science fiction or the fantasy stuff? Or like we talked to Chris Silva the other day and he's very, likes adventure as a term more.
Yeah, I do more adventure stuff because my stuff tends to just lean in whatever direction the story wants to go. So I've had pretty much elements of all of that stuff in my stories at one point or another. I don't really sit down and say I want to do a space story or a fantastical story. It's just like whatever the story is, it's what it ends up being. I've just had one in an anthology at the beginning of the year, Sidearm and Sorcery 2, called City Eater, which was supposed to be just a horror story, but it spun a bit out of control. So it's like whatever the story is what it ends up being.
So you're one of those guys, it's like, well, I just put the pen to paper and then it comes out and it's going to be what it's going to be.
Yeah, it just is what it is.
I've always envied guys that could do that, because for me it's like, oh, I need a detailed plan and know exactly what I'm doing at every point going into this. And, you know, then we got it, then we can edit it into something.
Well, like I still like outline stuff, but sometimes when you outline, it just ends up going, no, that's not the way the story's going. So it just goes the other way. It just happens.
Right on. So you said you work on multiple things at a time. I'm curious, like, you've been at this actually having published since 2016. How much work do you actually have out there?
Oh, right now, if we're including the Kickstarter, which was the 3 books which are being delivered right now, I'm going to be put on Amazon very soon as well. I've put out 10 books total, and I think I've written somewhere in the ballpark of about 20 to 30 short stories. Not all of them obviously are in like anthologies or magazines, but total, I think that's where I'm at right now.
I'm curious, do you have any like short story anthologies that you've put out yourself on top of things that have gone out in other publications but have gone past contractual time on them?
Yeah, actually, I have my page right here. I have Someone Is Aiming For You and Other Adventures, where the first 7 stories, more or less, that I, short stories I wrote, I put that out back in, was it 2020 or 2019? I don't remember which year. But those ones were, my original idea was just to do a sort of mashing up of like superhero stories and old pulp hero stories. And it came out to be this weird mishmash of noirish horror type superhero stuff. And I put that one out a while back. People seem to like that one.
It sounds awesome. I'm like, ooh, I'd read that.
Yeah, I put 7 stories in that one. They all kind of link together in kind of an overarching narrative in a way. You can read them standalone or read them together and get something else out of it. I like doing my short story collections like that. But that's the first one I did. I also have another one in the works right now that Kursova, of all people, is putting out next year, which should be interesting. That one is a lot harder to describe because there's planetary swords and planet, space cops, and all kinds of different things.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So you mentioned something there I'm going to key on just because it reminds me of why I hated the X-Files after a certain time and why Fringe got terrible really quickly. Part of what made the X-Files awesome was essentially it was a monster of a week adventure show for most of the show's run. The issues always crept in when they started paying more attention to the overarching storyline. Like, when you just hint that there's more to going on, everything functions beautifully. You know, let the episode be the episode. It's its own story. And maybe there'll be, like, little bits and, like, pieces of things. But the minute, like, and I want to say it's, like, from episode two to season two to three of Fringe, they decided to go whole hog on this alternate universe thing. And it's, like, I really prefer the show when it was a Monster of the Week show. I had self-contained episodes. I could just really like an episode, really not like an episode. And then you start focusing, everything becomes subservient to this greater plot. And it just kind of, it just certainly doesn't work in television. Even when I think of books like, you know, you've got the Dark Tower series by Stephen King, this big, long, arcing narrative that's going on. But what makes it good is like the overarching narrative is just kind of like there. You know that it's going somewhere because it's in a book series mostly, and he'll hint to little pieces of the broader story. But he does that in all of the other books of his like world too. Like, so it's like, what books aren't part of the Dark Tower story? At this point, I can't think of one. Like, there's, you know, you're pulling in Dr. Callahan or what is it, the Father Callahan from the Salem's Lot into the story in like book six or seven. So it's like, though it's I like things that tie together, but aren't slave to some overarching narrative. You know, they have their own life to themselves. So the idea of that as a short story, like it's like that feels to me like the way it's supposed to be done. Like, hey, there's a loose something here. Figure it out for yourself.
Yeah, that was a thing we were kind of playing around with in Pulp Rev for a while. Raul Nianzi did one called The Perils of Sasha Reed, which is a kind of intergalactic story of a race girl who gets caught up in precarious situations and always has to fumble her way out of it and in strange ways. But he would put out like a bunch of stories in a collection and they're all like connected to each other, but only in the sense that it's an overarching thing, but you can read them all standalone and they were perfectly fine. And I like that idea. And I kind of hope that is what ends up taking off more in the future. Cause I also don't like those sorts of stories where you're enjoying it and all of a sudden we're going to focus on this one thing to the exclusion of everything else. And then it just gets boring.
Well, it's like, I can't remember what it was back in the day, like, you know, with Lovecraft, like there were a lot of other writers that decided that they really liked that Cthulhu mythos. And then they'd start like incorporating elements of it. So it's like, okay, now we're kind of positioning these things in a universe that you don't really have anything to do with each other necessarily, but there's this idea that you kind of place them together because of this one little thing that ties them together in a small way. That's, to me, just way more interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I don't even remember where that came from, like, originally. I think we were talking about serials and then standalones, and people were going on about how come nobody does a standalone anymore, or how come everybody does a serial but it's always like delving into one thing. And then I think we eventually came to the conclusion that, well, you can kind of have them both because you can kind of have an overarching idea, but you can also keep that idea and tell any story you want as well on top of it. And I think that's more interesting.
Well, it's like more of like a appreciate having an overarching theme than like an overarching story.
Yeah, like that.
So now, in the time that you've been doing this, I'm curious, what are the things that you have found for you have been the most useful when it comes to building an audience or keeping, for me, which all boils down to keeping communication with your audience. I will note that really the thing that drew me to you on Twitter, where I discovered you, is you have a lot of interesting thoughts on things that have nothing to do with writing. In particular, your music posts always fascinate the shit out of me because you just like a very, very wide variety of musics from all sorts of ages.
Yeah, I just like, I remember back when I started, because when you start, you're on your own no matter who you are. You just have to figure out how to reach an audience. And I'm just sitting there with a book going like, okay, what am I supposed to do with it? I can't just go up to people and say, I have a book, read the book, because that's obnoxious and nobody's going to do that. But at the same time, I don't really want to do that because I don't just want to treat an audience like an economic unit, for lack of a better term. The whole point of art is to communicate. It's a back and forth. So I like to use social media as a way of just communicating with people, learning what people like, sharing what I like, maybe learning new things. And sometimes you get ideas or join groups that have similar ideas or new ideas you never thought of. So it's a nice mix. And I think the best thing that ever happened to me as a writer was originally finding the whole Pulp Rev group, because we're still around the same, a lot of the same people. We still talk about stuff. We still share ideas. We still encourage each other. And we're still putting out stuff, and we're meeting new people as well. That's one of the reasons the whole Iron Age thing coming up was nice to see, because it was good to see other people also getting into this sort of thing.
And to me, it harkens back to one of the things that with my client base and with the podcast that I've always tried to harp on. And it's funny that I harp on it, because and every author I talk to says pretty much the same thing, is that it's relationship building. Like the thing that's going to help you no matter what. And it's either with the relationship you build with your customers, the people that read your books, or the relationships you build in the industry. Those are the things that are going to separate the men from the boys, separate the wheat from the chaff, whatever. If you put the time in to build the relationships with people, that's what's going to, you know, take you next level. And what's also fascinating, and I understand this, is that the people that want to, like, I feel like want to build those relationships the least usually are the people that write this kind of content. You know, talking to Declan to me, he's like, well, the reason I became a writer was because I didn't want to talk to people. I wanted to stay at home and write books. But, like, because of the way the ecosystem is, it's like, you know, until more people like me jump into the space and just want to do the marketing, like, I don't have any real aspirations of being a writer myself. I love the work and love reading it, but it's like, I would much rather try and find a way to help somebody connect with other people. But until there's a lot more of us helping, you know, independent writers do that stuff, it's double duty on writers to, you know, try and be the marketing agency and the creative. And I mean, that's gotta be tough.
Oh yeah. I dealt with a few other writers who were very discouraged along the way. It happens. I mean, it's not always going to be easy, even if you have people reading who are going to want to buy everything you're going to do or whatever. And sometimes you even put something out and it does really well, but you don't get any real feedback on it. So you're just like, okay, I guess I guess people like this. So it's hard to tell sometimes.
We actually had a guest on, Jacob Calata, was on the other day. And one of his, you know, one of the little snippets I pulled out of the episode was just like his invisible readership. He's like, I wish I knew more about what these people liked or don't like about the material, because like my numbers keep going up and people are doing, like, there's more people buying this stuff than ever, but I have no idea what they're thinking, and that bothers me.
Yeah, I understand that idea. But at the same time, I just kind of like that there are people out there just like going about their day, just picking up stories, reading them, then going back about their day. So I don't think they all have to necessarily interact, but it's just nice to know every now and then what you're doing, if it's effective or not. Because writers, a lot of time, we do kind of work in a bit of a vacuum. So sometimes it's just like you can get lost in your own head. Wait a minute, maybe I'm not doing this right. Maybe I got to do this. Or so it's hard sometimes to keep where you're supposed to be going, you know, keep on the right way.
Now, I'm curious what methods that you do use to kind of keep in touch with your audience. Do you have, like, are you someone that has all of the social media stuff? Do you have social media that you feel works better than others for you to connect with people? Do you have a very robust, like, email list that you work with? What are the avenues that you take?
Posting nonsense on Twitter usually does the best for me.
Okay.
To be quite honest, I think Twitter is probably the best when it comes to the social media platforms, because you could keep in touch with not just your audience, but other writers and other people who are maybe outside your circles, or, you know, you connect with people a lot easier. Unlike, say, Facebook, which is kind of dead, doesn't really do a whole lot.
I was about to say, it's completely useless to me at this point.
Yeah, it doesn't really do a whole lot. I don't think it has really ever, but like, I had like a bigger account share one of my books on Twitter the other day, which was really nice. You don't really get that sort of thing on Facebook or any other really social media. I don't really get a whole lot in other social media. That's the only one that tends to work very well. I just think that's because who everybody is, really.
Okay. And do you do anything as far as like your email game goes?
Oh, I switched a while ago to Substack, because a lot of people really like Substack, and I find it worked very well for keeping campaign updates for the Kickstarter, but I also put some of my old blog posts on there as well, and they seem to do very well. I got some new subscribers, so I think Substack is probably going to be a good way to go for writers who want a bit more reach, because you can find more people that way on there.
Interesting. Well, and my only quibble or questions I have about this, because I know I've heard of money troubles with Substack behind the scenes, and so I hate to see too many people dive in utilizing that platform without, you know, making sure they're maintaining their list off platform, because God forbid if they ever shut down one of these days because of money problems, and then so many writers just lose everything.
Yeah, make sure you keep backups of everything. It doesn't even matter what it is, just keep backups of it, you know, your stories, your mailing lists, whatever. Just keep backups.
My six month you know, book release promo that I sell, one of the line items on there is what's called list maintenance, and it is just that, making sure that you're backing up your list at least once a week so that you don't lose everything. Because, you know, coming from the email marketing world, like, there's just, I've heard too many horror stories of somebody used this platform and then they got kicked off of MailChimp and now they hadn't saved in 3 months and now, you know, they lost 100,000 people that they had access to that now they don't.
I remember that. A couple of years ago, a lot of people were getting kicked off of MailChimp, and I was on MailChimp at the time, so I was like,
MailChimp's a crap service now, as far as I'm concerned. Like, don't know why anybody uses them.
Yeah, I left that a long time ago. And that was the part where I said, yeah, I better keep an extra list of my email list just in case anything happens.
Out of curiosity, what service do you use these days for that? Oh, you said, yeah, you said Substack, so.
Yeah, mainly use Substack now. If something else comes along, I'll probably switch to that. So it's whatever works the best. I find Substack seems to be working the best for reaching people right now.
Well, it has a discoverability element that just plain email does not. Because you can always go on Substack and search for things in this vein. Personally, the way I've chosen to do it is, like, I have my main email list, and then I also have a Substack that I, like, release a week later. So it's like, you can kind of, hey, it's cool that you're over here, but I'd really rather have you over here on my list. So, you know, you can get it a week early if you come over. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. Where can I send people to learn more about you and what you have going on out there?
Well, my main site is Wasteland and Sky, which is wastelandsky.blogspot.com, which is my author blog. It's my general website, has all of my stuff on it. My posts, which go back about 10 years at this point, some free stuff is on there. All my works are listed. And that's the main place to go.
Right on. Well, once again, thanks so much for coming on. And hopefully somebody managed to pick up something useful today. And if not, I'm sure they're going to have to go and read some of what you've done, because it all sounds incredibly interesting to me. CC, you have a good one.
Well, you too.
Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironagemarketing.com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.